common preventative, one of the first preventative medications that's prescribed for migraine is Topamax. And 53% of women studied on this study showed that they had significant bone loss to the point where they were now diagnosed with osteopenia. And they found a direct correlation between how long they were on the medication and the amount of bone loss they had. So they know that Topamax is contributing to osteoporosis in these women. And then there was the whole new class of medications, and this is the one that actually came to my attention first, is the CGRPs.
If you haven't done so already, go ahead and click that subscribe button down below. It's a little red button. You punch that and it's going to notify you every time we put out a new episode that can help you improve your bone health. And then also, if you haven't done so already, head over to bonecoach.com, sign up for the free 7-day osteoporosis kickstart. That's going to walk you through everything you need to be doing right now to get on the path to improvement and stronger bones. After you do those two things, go ahead and press play on this episode and I'll see you inside. Welcome to this episode of the Bone Coach Show. Joining us today to explore the connection between migraines, bone health, and osteopenia, osteoporosis is Dr. Tanya Painter. Dr. Tanya Painter graduated from the University of Washington with a bachelor's degree in cellular and molecular biology and a minor in inorganic chemistry before attending medical school at Bestyr University. She graduated in 2012 with her naturopathic medical degree and has been treating women with chronic migraines for almost a decade. Having suffered from chronic headaches herself for nearly 20 years, she has a God-given calling to help women find a way to manage their migraines more effectively. She's the founder of Migraine Mastery, a 24-week online program designed to significantly reduce migraines and help women better manage their symptoms so they can get back to saying yes to life. Dr. Tanya, it is so great to have you here today.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm looking forward to this. Let's get started with your personal journey and how you got into helping all these women all over the world now at this point, you know, improve their migraines and their health.
Yeah, I would have to say it started when I was 16 and rear-ended in a car accident. And that started kind of random headaches here and there through the rest of high school. And by the time I got into college, it started happening very frequently. I started having pretty much daily headaches. I was super fatigued all the time. My body felt like, I always described, I felt like I was an 80-year-old in a 20-year-old body. And, you know, then I started getting some of these weird neurological symptoms. I started seeing, I describe it as like seeing underwater. So you see all these lines and everything just looked wavy and made me super nauseous. And I just go lay down in a dark room. I had no idea they were migraines at the time. I was just like, wow, these are just really intense headaches. Okay. And it wasn't actually until I went to medical school that I understood. I actually had undiagnosed migraines for many, many years. and, you know, the chronic headaches that were just daily. And so that obviously led me down the path of trying to figure out how I could fix my own self and was able to get out of that cycle. So I haven't had a migraine in over 8 years now. And the only time I get headaches are, you know, I know exactly what causes them, right? It's usually self-induced because I choose to do something that maybe my body I know is not a good thing. But when the control is taken, you know, is taken back over and you have control to make those decisions and know this is going to cause me some problems, but I'm okay with it right now. That is a completely different place to be in than when you're just at the mercy of a headaches and migraines. So as I, you know, started in practice after graduation, I really had a spot in my heart for the people that would come in with chronic headaches and migraine. And, you know, I was always very, very successful because I had very intimate knowledge of how to treat it. And that kind of led me into what I'm doing now, where I'm specializing and you know, have a greater reach doing an online approach that's just as successful as I was doing in the one-to-one. And I can reach so many more women. And it's been a blessing.
Yes, doing these things online. I mean, it's really impactful. The reach is, it's great to be able to reach people in all corners of the world and across the U.S. too. Let's talk about, just for people that might not understand fully what migraines are, maybe they're experiencing them and don't even know it. So what are migraines? What's the difference between a migraine and a headache? And then maybe we can get into some of the underlying causes and contributing factors to them.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that there are a lot of people that were that are like I was, where they are experiencing migraines and they just don't know it, or you know, their doctors haven't been. It's a very underprescribed condition, and even so, we know that 1 in 4 people will experience migraine at some point in their life, and chronic migraines are, you know, very, very high percentage of, you know, sick days and illnesses and things like that. So a headache is what most people think of. A headache is just head pain, right? And that's commonly, you know, that can be triggered by muscle. It can be triggered by, you know, being hungover. It can be triggered by a lot of different things. But it's just a simple headache. Usually goes away when you take an over-the-counter or you do a massage or a warm bath and help to relax those muscles and the pain goes away. That's a general headache. When we're looking at migraines, there's certain diagnostic criteria you have to meet in order to have a diagnosis of migraine. So you have to have at least 5 headaches that last between 4 and 72 hours. So they're usually longer, that are not successfully treated. Like you can't take a medication like an Advil or something and it goes away. So it's not responsive. And it also has a few other things that come along with it, such as it's only on one side of the head as opposed to general head pain, or it's got a pulsating quality, or it causes you to have to avoid doing certain activities like climbing the stairs or something like that. And it's accompanied by nausea, vomiting, photophobia, which is light sensitivity or sound sensitivity. So if you have a constellation of those symptoms, and it can just feel like an intense headache, but then you have, you know, the weird visual things or whatever, then you're looking at a migraine as opposed to just a regular run-of-the-mill headache.
Yeah, and let's talk about maybe some of the other things. How do we, when we're looking at migraines as a whole, what are some of the things that we can do maybe to help improve the migraines once we get them? Like how would you look at this and approach that if somebody's already got migraines?
So if they've already been diagnosed with migraines, there's actually a lot of overlap between migraine and your approach to osteoporosis, because the way that we approach migraine is I call them the 8 focus areas. So we have number one on the list is diet and gut health, right? We have to get the digestion and the nutrition on board. Hormones are huge. Adrenals and stress function, or stress and adrenal function. And then we've got, you know, some genetic factors and some neurotransmitter things that we can take a look at. But generally speaking, from a foundational standpoint, we want to look at how stress is affecting us. So our elevated cortisol levels, how that's affecting inflammation, make sure that we have enough nutrition on board and, you know, that we're eating enough. When you feel nauseous all the time from these migraines, you don't want to eat. And so, you know, people come to me and they're very calorically restricted. They're not getting a wide variety of foods because the one thing they can control is food that goes in their body. And when they find everything seems to trigger them because their gut is just not where it needs to be, then they end up eating 2 or 3 things and then they become nutritionally deficient in certain key nutrients that they need. And so we begin with, you know, there's obviously medications and acute abortive things that they can do, and they're usually already on that by the time they come see me. So then we really start working on a lot of the foundational stuff. And number one is diet. We need to work on expanding diet, and that freaks a lot of people out because when they've restricted so much, the idea of adding foods in that they know have triggered them in the past is a really hard thing to do. So there's a lot of, I won't say counseling work, but just support that they need to understand, like their body needs that nutrition in order to be able to heal properly. So we really focus in on that for the first little bit. And then we kind of step into some of the more specific individualized treatments that include things like testing hormones, testing neurotransmitters, looking at genetic function and where we need to support things there, and then tailoring not only diet and supplemental things that they can do, but also incorporating a lot of the lifestyle stuff that we know is just healthy in general, getting out and exercising, getting quality sleep, making sure that we're managing our stress properly. Those kinds of things play a huge role in just our overall health, as you know, and you know, how our body responds to inflammation. So We need to make sure we get those pieces on board. And then the rest of it kind of starts falling into place. We'll start seeing reduction in certain types of migraines. But what surprised a lot of people is that there's more than one type. So you could have a hormonal migraine, and you can have a, you know, a migraine caused by vasodilation in the brain when your blood vessels get big, and that causes increased pressure. Triptans, which is a common medication used for migraines, work really well on that blood vessel one, but it doesn't do squat for a hormone thing. So then we start seeing, okay, well, that's why my medication sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. And that starts to become more clear as the body's getting in balance. And we're starting to see, oh, okay, these migraines are actually related to hormones. So let's take a look at this and start addressing this. And so we can kind of unpeel the layers of the onion to really get a better understanding of what's going on.
Now, you talked about diet and nutrition just a minute ago, and obviously there's more to an entire nutrition plan, and it's going to look different for every single person. But are there some foods that you like to see and that are maybe universal or somewhat universal for a lot of people that you like to see?
Yeah, I've heard actually multiple of your guests talking about these foods. I think we all agree on them, right? So definitely, you know, making sure that you're getting high omega-3 fatty acids. Fish and seafood is a really great place to do that. Or, you know, if you're more of a red meat kind of person, the grass-fed free-range organic beef is another fantastic. Like, I love cooking my beef that we get from a local farmer, and it smells like I'm cooking fish. Like, that's when you know you have some good high quality omega-3 fatty acids, when your beef smells like fish. So definitely that. We really emphasize a ton of fruits and vegetables. So there's a lot of research coming out on the health of our gut microbiome, the good bacteria in our gut, and how that plays such a significant role just in general health. And specifically as it's relating to migraine, huge implications. And so we're really starting to focus in on just a ton of fruits and veggies. So one of the studies that I saw suggested that people who ate 40 or more different plant-based foods every week had a much lower level of inflammation, less pain. This wasn't migraine specific, just general. So we're looking at a wide variety of those foods, and it sounds like that's a ton of, you know, different plants, but it's actually, I started doing it because I don't ask my people to do it if I don't do it. And it's actually so much easier than I thought it would be. You just go shopping once a week, you grab a bunch of stuff, you can do it in smoothies, which is how I do it. And then you have salads regularly, and, you know, it's quite delicious. And then we've actually seen a pretty significant improvement even in what we had been doing with people who are following this regularly. We want to make sure that we're getting rid of sugars and those high inflammatory foods. So the diet that I generally suggest somebody with migraines start with is like an autoimmune protocol, because we know that takes away all of the anti-inflammatories, right? You're working on those omega-3s, you're working on anti-inflammatory foods, you're really supporting those good vegetables and fruits. But also, from a migraine specific standpoint, you can't go grain free. But in the majority of people with chronic migraine, they do worse, because the grains are so important in our serotonin production, which is a big implicator in migraine etiology as well. So we need to make sure we're doing things to support serotonin. But generally speaking, like with, I think, every other chronic condition, same kind of dietary things apply, right? We just need a wide variety of good quality, healthy, organic foods. And we need to make sure that it's just an anti-inflammatory diet all the way around. So no processed foods, total whole foods.
And you're right. For a lot of people, when they hear, you know, 40 to 50 different foods a week, some people are struggling probably just from all foods together, you know, fats and proteins and all different categories together. But when I think about that too, sometimes when I make a salad myself, it could have, just in that salad alone, 10, 15, you know, 18, exactly, 20 different things between, you know, fruits or vegetables or herbs or proteins and all that kind of stuff too. So it's absolutely possible, and it doesn't have to be as intimidating as probably most people think.
And it's not 40 different servings, to be clear. It's 40 different like things. So you can have like a half of a carrot, and that counts, right? And I didn't catch that at the beginning. I was like, how am I going to eat 40 different servings of fruits and like, that's tons. And even for me, but so you can have small amounts, but just a wide variety of those small amounts. So it is a lot easier than it seems at first.
For sure. I mean, sometimes for me, it's I'll be chopping up rosemary is one of my favorite herbs too. So incorporating just a little bit of that, and you don't need a lot, but still that even counts too towards those total. So okay. And then I know, you kind of brought this to my attention too about you mentioned medications there too. And obviously for osteoporosis medications, some of the people, I would say most people we work with, they're trying to do everything they possibly can naturally before considering that approach as an option. That's 85, 90%. Some people have already started these medications and they end up coming off, or they end up staying on them because they've got really poor quality bone. Do osteoporosis medications put someone at risk for developing migraines?
So that it was very, it's very interesting as I'm doing more research into migraines. Some of the crossover I'm seeing on the migraine medications can potentially be contributing to osteoporosis and osteopenia in the migraine patient. But conversely, yes, there are medications that, Fosamax and Boniva are two that I kind of dug in just out of curiosity a little bit. Boniva actually has one of the most common side effects is headache. Wasn't specifically migraine, but headache. Fosamax actually showed it was a low percentage, it was under 1% of people, but they actually showed that as a side effect that they develop migraine with aura, which is a very specific kind of migraine. And so that, that's a little bit concerning, especially since, women are more prone to migraines than men, and women are also more prone to osteoporosis, especially postmenopausally. And we tend to see that migraines that develop postmenopausally tend to be harder to treat than those that, well, at least from my in my approach, it's harder to treat because of that hormonal change that happens. Whereas, someone that's developing migraine earlier tends to, you can do a lot more interventive things to help balance a body at when you're younger, right? You don't respond as well as you get older. So those two osteoporosis medications can contribute to migraine and headache. Or conversely, if there's somebody who is on a migraine, regimen, and now they're starting to develop osteopenia, and then there's a concern there. I have never, until I ran across this in research, I've never heard of that connection. Nobody's ever talked about the potential risk for developing osteoporosis as a result of taking certain medications. Well, migraine medications, right? We know that there's a link between increased fracture risk and NSAIDs and steroid use and things like that, right? But one of the most common preventative, one of the first preventative medications that's prescribed for migraine is Topamax. And 53% of women studied on this study showed that they had significant bone loss to the point where they were now diagnosed with osteopenia. And they found a direct correlation between how long they were on the medication and the amount of bone loss they had. So they know that Topamax is contributing to osteoporosis in these women. And then there was the whole new class of medications, and this is the one that actually came to my attention first, is the CGRPs. So CGRP inhibitors and monoclonal antibodies are the newest, latest and greatest migraine medication treatments. But CGRP, so is it okay if I kind of go into a little bit on what this is?
Oh, please do. Yeah, please.
Okay. So CGRP is, it was discovered in the mid 80s. We're still learning how it's really affecting the body. But what we know is that there's two forms. There's the alpha and the beta. Alpha form is responsible for functions in the central and peripheral nervous system, right? So really works on the nerves. And the beta is really responsible for interaction and controlling the GI tract. So when we're looking at blocking, so CGRP is implicated in how it is of in migraine etiology. So how things that cause migraine, CGRP is elevated in people with chronic migraine. So we know that there's a connection there. But we also know that CGRP is necessary for promoting bone formation. So the presence of CGRP actually increase osteoblasts, which are the bone, the cells that that cause the bone to grow, and osteoclasts that break down bones, those are inhibited with the presence of CGRP. So you can see the conflict here. If we're on a CGRP inhibitor for our migraine, then what is happening is that it's no longer supporting that osteoblast activity. So bone formation is being retarded and the osteoclast formation is no longer being held back. And now we're starting to see an increased breakdown in bones. And so they actually did some preliminary studies and showed that there is indeed, in people who are taking these medications, there is indeed a loss of bone density. But they don't know the extent to, you know, how long you have to be on it. We don't know any of it. These medications are still fairly new. Some of them have only been on the market for 1 or 2 years. So, you know, this could be a major problem for some, especially if, you know, osteoporosis runs in the family or you already have concerns with bone health. And that needs to be a conversation that somebody with migraine has with their doctor, because this could be a huge problem down, you know, 10, 15 years down the road if they're on these medications and they're losing bone density over all that time. You know, what is it going to look like when they're in their 60s?
Exactly. You have to look at the leading indicator things now, get a baseline of, you know, if most people who are listening to this probably already have a baseline of their bone density, or maybe they have some bone turnover markers or something like that that have already been done. But if you haven't, you need to get them. And then, you know, monitor specific things over time to make sure that you're not moving in the wrong direction.
Absolutely. And I'll just put out there that there is so much information to be learned about medications that doctors aren't going to know it. I didn't know this connection until I started digging into it a little bit more. So, you know, really just a plug for self-advocacy and just having a little bit of understanding, and bring it up to your doctor. Don't expect them to bring it up to you, because quite honestly, it's just not going to happen. So.
Yeah, no, amen to that. And then are there any other things that you think are important? Any other commonalities that you've seen between maybe issues with people that have bone health issues that also have issues with migraines? Any other commonalities there?
Yeah, I'm really starting to see the, you know, I know that you have talked about mitochondria multiple times, and several of your guests have kind of talked about the importance of that in osteoporosis, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and it holds true for migraine as well. And I think that as we learn a little bit more about the impact that our mitochondrial function has on our health in general, that we're going to start seeing a lot more doctors moving towards supporting mitochondrial health. That's not something that we really talked a lot about in med school, even 10 years ago when I went through. Of course, we learned about it and the importance, but it was never a major focus of treatment. And I'm starting to see, you know, with how some of these just really chronic issues and looking at some of the medications that have a negative impact, that we know that common medications that are prescribed, SSRIs, proton pump inhibitors, like acid blockers for acid reflux that are prescribed like candies, those are all mitochondrial toxic. And so as we're taking medications to deal with symptoms, then we're actually poisoning the most important part of our cells that actually give us the energy for the cell to function in a proper way. And then on top of that, we see some of the nutrient deficiencies that we have, you know, if we're not getting enough magnesium, if we're not getting enough of our good, healthy anti-inflammatories and omega-3 fatty acids, then we also start seeing that that's problematic from a mitochondrial function. And interestingly, the increased intake of phosphorus and vitamin D and calcium, magnesium for bone health, we also see some of that crossing over into migraine as well, specifically the magnesium and some CoQ10 things. That, you know, again, that, you know, that common link, it makes sense that it could be mitochondrial in nature. So I really think that as we work on, you know, just really focusing attention into nutrition, gut health, and as well as paying attention to the commonality with the potential for the mitochondrial link, that we can see some major movements. And even, you know, even just focusing in on those two areas for my clients from a migraine standpoint, we've seen some significant impact in people that they even went through my whole program and nothing worked. And then when we got really laser focused in on the mitochondrial piece, they actually started showing improvement. So there's something really big here that I don't think is fully being explored by obviously not conventional medicine. And I even think that it's not quite as prevalent as it should be, even in, you know, alternative and functional medicine approaches as well. So something to consider.
Yeah, I love your approach and that you're taking all these things into consideration. And I also love in terms of nutrients, you mentioned specifically omega-3 fatty acids, how important they are. That's so, so important. And magnesium as well. So those are both two amazing things to incorporate. And then what else can somebody do to not only support their bone health, but also make sure they're going to prevent migraines from happening while they're doing it?
Yeah, I think really focusing in on lifestyle stuff. And I'm sure that, you know, your audience has heard this a billion times, but I'm going to say it too.
Do it.
Because, you know, really coming down to diet and our stress management, I think are the two biggest influencers in a positive or negative way on our health, whether it's chronic fatigue or hormone imbalance or osteoporosis or migraine. If we're not feeding our body the high density nutritious foods it needs, and we're not, you know, taking time to get out and enjoy nature, to enjoy spending time with family, we're just constantly on the go. We're constantly being stimulated by cell phones and podcasts and, you know, TVs and whatever else that we're doing. If we don't, I mean, it's hard to sit still. I find myself doing the same thing. Like if I'm sitting on the couch, just kind of talking with my husband, I find my mind wandering to my phone. Like, oh, I want to go check my email. And it's like, no, you know, so it's like, it's work. You have to actually intentionally say, no, I'm not going to do this because of, you know, we know the neurological changes that it has, the dopamine hits we get. And so we have to train ourselves to kind of step back from technology and allow ourselves the ability to relax. I think that our society does not value, it values busyness. It values, look at all the things that I'm doing and all the activities my kids are involved in. And I have zero time to sit down and take a bath. Like you brag about, you know, reading a book for an hour and a half and taking a bath. People are going to think you're lazy, right? Because that's the society. Like you have to be busy. And I think that there's something so important in allowing ourselves to look at it from a different perspective. And I don't say that I'm lazy when I take an hour lunch and sit and read my book and relax. I look at it as I'm doing self-care now, and this is an investment in my health. It's not a money investment. It's a time investment. It helps that I love doing it too. So, you know, but I think that that's just so important. And, you know, for the people that come into our program, when we're talking about it, and I mean, people can't even find time to cook a healthy meal for themselves because they just don't have time to do it because of all the activities. So we really have to sit down and prioritize, okay, you know, you have engaged in this program with us. How are you going to make this work? Because we have to. And so then as they're starting to say, okay, well, I actually don't have to do this and I don't have to do this. And I could actually ask my husband to help with this. Suddenly they've carved out time that they realized that they didn't have to do it all. And there are resources around them. But when we're so used to doing it, we just kind of go with it. And we think, I can't give up anything. Like there's no other way. So, you know, I think it's just really important for us to just kind of think about that and think about what does that look like in my life? Like, how can I take my busy life and make it less busy? How can I make things easier for me? How can I incorporate my family one Sunday every month that for 4 hours, we all just meal prep and then we freeze it. And then suddenly now I have a month's worth of really healthy, nutritious meals that will take me 15 minutes to cook. And, you know, so those kinds of life hacks that we can do to kind of help feed ourselves nutritionally, but also spiritually and emotionally, where we can just sit back and just allow ourselves to be.
And we can never have enough reminders of that, you know, to focus on the diet and nutrition, the stress, the sleep, the exercise, all that stuff. There's never enough reminders because there's always going to be this ever present, you know, the phone, the dopamine hits, all these things calling us. We're so busy all around us. That's always going to be there. So we have to figure out how to make sure we take care of ourselves while all those things are still present. Dr. Tanya, this has been fantastic. Let's talk about where people can find you and, you know, tell us a little bit about how you support people.
Sure. So I have a 12-week course called Migraine Mastery that is available, you know, for people to take a look at on our website at migrainemastery.org. And then if they're more interested in our 24-week course, which is working with me and my team of specialists, then, you know, that option is on there as well. But I have a ton of resources for people. It's at migrainemastery.org/resources. And, you know, there's some dietary stuff. These are all, of course, migraine specific dietary stuff. Some of the, I call it my 48 things list, all the things that we know contribute to migraine. So instead of just a handful of medication options, you have a lot of other things that you can explore to really start digging down into what's causing stuff. So there's a few different things on there. We're on YouTube at Migraine Mastery and Migraine Free Life. And we also have a Facebook group, Migraine Mastery and My Migraine Support Group. So
love it. Lots of support options. We're going to link to the resources Dr. Tanya pointed out just there. And, you know, if you've listened to this and you found it helpful, and as always, you know, if you're not on the YouTube channel yet, go over to the YouTube channel at Bone Coach and all the other social channels on Instagram or at Bone Coach Kevin, and then at Bone Coach on Facebook. And TikTok is still budding. It's still just trying to get that one off the ground. It's not working out yet. And then for the podcast, make sure you subscribe. And if you find this helpful, make sure you leave a review and let us know how we're doing. So Dr. Tanya, I want to thank you again so much for your time. For everybody listening, you can find all the resources, show notes, everything mentioned here today over at bonecoach.com/Tanya Painter Migraine Mastery Osteoporosis. I want to thank everyone again so much for your time. We'll see you in the next episode. Hey, it's Bone Coach Kevin Ellis. Hope you found that episode helpful and that you enjoyed it. Just one last reminder, if you haven't done so already, head over to bonecoach.com, sign up for your free 7-day osteoporosis kickstart. It's going to tell you everything you need to do to start getting on the path to improvement. Hope you found this helpful. I'm your Bone Coach Kevin Ellis. I'll see you soon.